Hello, and welcome to Creative Playdate, the show for people pursuing creative careers while also raising children. I'm Michelle Condrich. Today's episode is an interview with the incredible illustrator Melinda Beck. She works as a graphic designer, an illustrator, and is also the single parent to two teenage girls. We talk about the difference between the childhood her teenagers have had and her own childhood growing up in New York City, and about how she uses a simplified lifestyle to keep everything running smoothly. And with that, please enjoy my interview with Melinda Beck.
Live in Providence?
We did up until very recently. We've been all over the place. My husband got a job at the University of Maryland in March. So we had like 3 weeks to move from the Providence area and move to the DC area. So it's been a little crazy. But yeah, we were in Providence for about two and a half years.
How come?
That's also kind of a convoluted thing. We met and got married in New York, and then my husband started, he got into a PhD program at the University of Denver. So we moved to Colorado, where we were there for about 5 years. And then we just kind of wanted to come back to the East Coast, but New York was not really an affordable option, obviously, for anybody. And we knew some people in Providence. We'd heard really great things about it. So we just kind of said, okay, let's just go back. And my husband had been teaching at Johnson & Wales in Colorado. So at least he knew he could get adjunct work there when we got there. So yeah.
Yeah, just I went to college there.
Yeah, yeah. I would have loved to have the opportunity to go to an art school like that. I mean, especially Providence is such a nice little city.
It's funny, when I was there, I don't know, Buddy CNC, it was like super corrupt, and it was like a total Rust Belt town with nothing going on. There was no, that whole like little beautiful little Venetian like lagoon thing that was just covered up, cemented over, like it was nothing.
Wow.
I just actually last year, because my daughter runs track and regionals were up there, and I was like, it's so nice, it's nothing like where I went to school. Although when I was at school, my rent was $150 a month, and that was kind of nice. Yeah.
Did you hear, there was a podcast, what's it called? Crime Town, I think.
I love it. Everyone is listening to it. Yeah, because we were there when all that was happening, so it was really funny.
That's interesting. Yeah, I started to listen to it, but I couldn't, the podcast itself, I just couldn't really get that into, but I imagine that if you had been living there during that time, it would be really
It was really fun.
All right, well, I mean, I guess we might as well go ahead and get started if that's
good. Sounds good.
Okay. So today I'm speaking with award-winning illustrator, animator, graphic designer, New York City native, and mother, Melinda Beck. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I lived in New York City, and I only know the city of the last decade or so, which is vastly different than it was when you were growing up there. Can you just tell me a little bit what your childhood was like?
I guess I can start at the beginning. My parents actually met at art college at PCA, which is now University of the Arts. And when I was very little, when I was three, so in 1969, we moved to New York City to the Upper West Side. And it was interesting. It was, you know, the city was bankrupt. The police were very corrupt. It was pretty crime ridden, but it was also a place where a lot of artists move because it was super cheap. So a lot of my friends, my parents' friends were like jazz musicians and writers. And so it was kind of inspiring in that way. And also a lot of people moved here who didn't fit in other places in the country because they were like interracial couples or gay couples. So it was a really exciting group of adults to grow up around.
And you have two children, right?
Yeah, two girls, 14 and 15. Well, 16 next week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I suppose she doesn't isn't really that interested in like a driver's license or anything in New York City.
Well, I have no driver's license, so I can't really help her with that.
Right.
And a car, so.
Parenting them in the same city that you grew up in, that's so much different now. What is that like? I mean, are there things that you wish they could experience that you did, and vice versa, like things about the city now that you wish had been when you were a kid?
I actually don't. I mean, like, my childhood was kind of fun in its crazy lawlessness. Like, I was going to clubs when I was, like, I started going, I think Studio 54 was the first club I went to in, like, eighth grade.
Oh my God.
And it's just like, now that seems completely insane, you know, when I say it. Like, I started smoking cigarettes when I was in fourth grade, you know. It's just like, it was just like a total free-for-all. So in a way, it was kind of a, you know, it was crazy. Like, Mick Jagger showed up at a middle school party, in my high school party. It was just like, I was in middle school. Like, it was just a completely insane place to grow up. So I kind of miss that for them, but I'm kind of glad that they can get around the city without having to worry about being mugged.
Right.
And that's really nice. And they also, I mean, their generation is very different from my generation. And just in general, all my friends and I kind of comment on it. You know, we were Generation X, and I think it was like this in the 1970s, all the parents kind of just checked out a little. So we were kind of left to our own devices. I don't know if you've ever heard the term latchkey kids, were kids. And even my parents were they were artists and stuff, but they were pretty straightforward. Even they, you know, it was just a whole different time. Like, there was no car seats, there was no rubber mats at playgrounds, there was no, you know, all these things that we have. So, but on the other hand, my kids, it's like, they're teenagers now, and I thought we'd be doing like hardcore into the drug and sex talks, and we are not, and it's really nice. It's a lot easier. And they're also just, they're more, you know, like, I feel like their teenagers are a lot less traumatic than mine were, you know, like, the teasing in schools and the kind of, Lord of the Flies middle school doesn't really happen, you know, because I think, you know, it's funny, I always blame the other kids, but really it was the adults, because when I was in middle school and high school, adults, you know, didn't do anything. They're like, kids are kids. So they, like, totally, completely torment each other. That's just
right.
Being kids. Now there's no tolerance for that. So it doesn't happen. So it makes school a much more pleasant experience for them.
Yeah. I find that I have to remind myself, even though my daughter's 3.5, so in terms of like her childhood, it's still just beginning, obviously, but I have to remind myself sometimes that her childhood is just not going to be my childhood, no matter what. I mean, I grew up in the middle of nowhere in Nebraska, so it's clearly not going to be just by the fact that she won't be growing up in rural Nebraska, but you know, it's, you have to just remind yourself that, like, it's just going to be different, because mine was different than my parents, and, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing that's the same is I really love being a teenager in the city, like just being able to get on the subway and go to a museum, or like go out to see a band and stuff like that. And they're starting to do stuff like that on their own. And that's really nice. Just to have everything a subway ride away.
Yeah. I'm a little jealous of your kids right now. I miss New York City. It was a fun place to be.
Yeah. They didn't, though, then when they were little, they just couldn't get over that we didn't have a lawn. I'm like, forget it. You're just never going to have a lawn. I'm sorry.
Well, so I want to shift gears a little bit back to just how you got into illustration and everything. I heard your interview with Sam Weber on Your Dreams, My Nightmares, and you talked about deciding where to go to school, and it sounded like you were only applying to art schools when you were going to college. Was art always something that you intended to pursue?
Well, it's funny because I'm just about to start the college process with my oldest daughter, and that was one thing that was so much easier when I was a kid. Because first of all, college was relatively affordable. Like, I could work a summer design job and pay for one semester at RISD, which is completely unheard of now. So now there's the whole factor of who's going to give you a financial break, because who can really lay out, you know, college for 4 years is $500,000 for a private college. And that's insane. So for me, it was a really simple process. My kids have more diverse interests than I did. I did art. I only did art. I always did art. I was like, I lived and breathed art as I grew up. So I knew I was going to art college. I applied to 3 colleges, RISD, University of the Arts, and Carnegie Mellon. Saw RISD, fell in love with it. We could swing it financially. And that was it. So it was a really easy cut and dry process.
Yeah. Your parents were graphic designers, right?
Yeah.
So were they pretty encouraging of a career in the arts?
Oh my God. My dad was like, I just remember him. He worked at home too. He would just get off a phone with a client and he's like, look at all the changes I have to do. Do you really want to do this to yourself? And I was like, of course, I'm young and dumb. You can't dissuade me.
Yeah. Well, when you started school, how did you anticipate making a living on your art? Or was it sort of like, oh, I'll just figure that out after school?
Well, I saw my parents. It was a little easier for me because I saw exactly how my parents did it. Mm-hmm. And their scenario is really similar to mine. They worked at home. They lived on the Upper West Side. They only had me, so they only had one kid to pay for. I have two. So I knew exactly how it was done.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, if you want to make it in the arts, you don't have any expensive habits. You know, your expensive habit is the less money you spend means the more time you have to do the art you like and the job and less of the jobs that you don't like.
Yeah.
Because usually, not always, but it's usually directly in proportional. The more you get paid for a job, the less creative freedom you're going to have.
Yeah.
That's not always the case, but it is a lot of the time.
Yeah. And you didn't start in illustration, right?
Yeah. Well, that was another, I was like an obsessive drawer. And by the time I got to school, I'd been drawing. I went to the Art Students League for like 10 years before I got to, it was totally insane, before I got to, RISD. So I had been doing 10 years of oil painting and life drawing, and I was kind of done with drawing. Like, I'm like, I can draw realistically. So I kind of wanted to do something else. And my dad was also like, don't be an illustrator. You'll never make any money and you'll never have any health insurance. So I was like, okay, I'll do graphic design. And graphic design at RISD was fun and exciting. And it was also, you know, a lot of painting letters and painting color swatches was also very rigorous, which was good because it a lot of the stuff I learned I could apply to illustration, a lot of the color theory and like brush technique. So I got out and I graduated in 89, which was a really awful recession. And I had worked really hard at RISD, got really good grades. And I was like, I'm from New York, so I know my way around. This is going to be easy. And it was like, I went on 30 interviews during the summer and I just couldn't get any job. And I was like, it was just like a total slap in the face. Like, I went from being at RISD and being at the top of the mountain to just like the bottom. And the first job I got was in corporate design, which was not what it's not me. Like, I'm very, my work is very expressive. It's very like, you know, I kind of push the envelope with a lot of the stuff I do, and that is not the thing you do in corporate design. So I started doing that, and at nights and on the weekends, I would do little drawings of how much I hated my boss and hated my life. And my boyfriend at the time graduated a year later, and he was like, this kind of looks like illustration. I'll just take it along with my portfolio. So he dropped off the portfolios at like 100 different places. And I got my first job from Steve Heller at the New York Times. It was like a piece about an inch by an inch. And it took me like 3 days to do it. And I got paid like $75 and it sucked, but that was my first piece.
Yeah.
And I started doing illustration at nights and on the weekends and really loved it. It was total self-expression. Totally get my angst out. You know, a lot of the stories I got are very emotional or very political, and I can really just get my thing on there.
Yeah.
It's like coordinate corporate design.
Would you ever, or have you ever considered working in-house as an illustrator anywhere? Like, is that something that interests you at this point?
That actually never existed till recently, the in-house thing. I don't know. I kind of, well, with the kids, this is so much of a better life. It's much more flexible. You know, if I work somewhere, I would be gone all day. You know, they get home, you know, I wouldn't see them in the morning and the evening as much. So right now that's not even a possibility.
Yeah.
This is just better for me right now.
Yeah. I feel a little spoiled sometimes, like working freelance with a kid in the way that, you know, taking her to and from school, I don't have to be, well, 'cause she's younger. So I don't have to be on such a tight schedule with that. If she needs a doctor's appointment or whatever, it's not like, you know, you don't have to take time off or, but, yeah.
Yes, my days still kind of flow back and forth between work and kid stuff kind of fluidly, which is nice. It doesn't have to be like, and here I'm at work, and then here I'm at home. Like, if something needs to be taken care of, like some form needs to be filled out in the middle of the day, I can stop my work and do it. But it usually means I work till 11 o'clock every night because my day is broken up a little bit by dealing with kid logistics.
Yeah. At what point during your career did you become a parent?
Oh, last possible biological minute, 35.
And were you, have you always been freelancing since the corporate job, or have you ever had to take day jobs in addition?
One job. I quit that job. I did 2.5 years of that job. And by the end, I was doing so much work on the nights and the weekends. I was like, all right, it's time to see if I can do this. And I was still, 2.5 years out of school. Brooklyn was an incredibly cheap place to live. I had no expenses. So I was like, let's do it. Then the week I did that, I got a job at a really cool design firm, which was the job I wanted out of school. This place, Alexander Isley Design. And that's where I kind of, a place I would have fantasized I would have worked right out of school. So I was like, all right, you know what? I know I plan on going freelance, but I'm just going to do this for like a year and a half just to build up the cool design in my portfolio. So when I leave, I can have some experience and some projects that are more like what I want to do afterwards. And I'm still doing design now. Like this week, I only did a little illustration. I did some logo and some website design. So I'm still doing that too.
Yeah. So were you freelance when your first child was born, or were you working?
Oh, I was way. Okay. That was only, I only worked at full-time jobs for 3.5 years.
Oh, okay.
So I was like 10 years after that I had my kid.
Yeah. So what was transitioning into motherhood like for you?
Hitting a wall. I mean, I put it off to the last moment for a reason. Like, I really loved my life before kids. Like, I loved working all the time. I loved traveling, going out with my friends. It was super fun. And I, even though I really wanted to have kids, for some reason, I couldn't quite put my finger on, like, it was just this goal that I had, and I didn't know why. I was really reluctantly gave up my life before kids. So when it happened, it was just like, the first year is, there's nothing like the first year. It's insane. It's just insanity.
Yeah.
Like, after the first year, I don't even know how we survived as a species. It was so hard. Everything was hard. Breastfeeding was hard. They, I had these things that just screamed at me. It was so hard. So it was definitely hitting a wall. I remember after the first year, I was entering stuff in American Illustration. And I was looking back at what I did that year, and I was like, this is the worst work I have done. It was just a year of super shitty work. It was just a total disaster year. It was what it was. Mm-hmm. I was half awake. I think I was half awake the whole year.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Did you have any childcare at that time?
We never did nannies because we were around the house, and most nannies are older women who have families to support. So they want to work
full time,
7 a.m. till 7 p.m.
Yeah.
And when the kids napped, we didn't need someone around. So we'd have like shifts of sitters that came in. They were usually college students. We actually just saw my youngest daughter and I just went and saw, one of our longtime sitters isn't a band now. Kim and Matt.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah.
So we just saw them and they were great. They were just it was so funny because she was just a little bit younger than us. And she's like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing either. And she started when Chloe was just like a week old. And we both kind of figured it out together. And it was a nicer relationship because we were close to the same age. She was younger. So it was more of a kind of friend relation, like someone I'd like to have hanging out in my house. An older woman who has grown children. And that seemed a little weird hanging out in my house for us.
Yeah.
So
what, did you always want to have a second child?
Yeah, I was an only child, so I had to do the sibling fantasy. Like, I'm like, I'm sorry, guys, you're going to live my sibling fantasy. Suck it up. And they're two girls, and they're 23 months apart because I did wait till the last biological moment, so I had to, like, do them one right after another. So, I had to. But after two, I was like, and that's it.
Yeah.
Three is just, that's a trip to, like, the suburbs.
Yeah, right. Did you feel like it had a big effect on your identity and how you saw yourself?
Oh yeah. I remember the lowest point was, I don't know if you've ever had this happen, where teachers or people in stores or doctors will call you mommy, like just mommy. Like you have no name, you have no identity, just the mommy. Like a doctor, there's one point where I was with a doctor, this older guy, and he's just calling me, well, mommy. And I just felt so like, oh my God, like I used
That's
to
not
be,
what, yeah.
I was in communication arts. I was like winning all these awards and I'm just mommy now. I don't even have a name. So when the kids were about three, I had a slight midlife crisis and I decided I needed to like get my identity back. And at that point we were living in Park Slope. So everyone had kids. Like I was like, I can't get out of this freaking kid world. Not hanging out with my friends from college anymore. The only people I hang out with are other people who happen to have kids the same age as me, and they would not necessarily all of them be people I would hang out with. The only thing in common is we produced offspring at the same time.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was like, I'm losing it. So I decided, what do I have to do? And I had always swam, just lap swim at the YMCA, and I was like, I need to go swim in the Hudson River. That is what I have to do. I have to go swim in the Hudson River.
It's very specific.
And, yeah. Very specific. Like, this is how I'm going to like get my mojo back. So I Googled swimming in the Hudson River, and it turns out you can actually do it. Like there are races in the Hudson River. So I started training at the Y, and then I was like, I need to practice outside in the ocean. So I found a group down in Coney Island, also on the internet, that swims in the ocean. And a lot of the swimmers don't have kids. So they were doing, so it was like, I could go there. Like I would just leave Park Slope every Sunday morning and I would go there and swim and like, with all these people that didn't have kids were doing all these interesting things like swimming in the English Channel and swimming in the middle of winter. And it was just like my break from mommy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started doing, the swimming took on like a little more, like I did a 4-person relay around Manhattan, swam in the San Francisco Bay, did another race up in Boston.
Wow.
Like I just had to like get my identity back as someone who was not mommy.
Yeah. So when your kids were younger, were you able to like take them places and do things like go to museums and things, or was that just, you know, out of the question for the 3 or 4 years?
Kinda. You know, I always kind of brought them with me. The funny thing about the swimming is they saw me do the 4-person around Manhattan, and now they're both of them are championship runners. Like one of them is ranked in the country, another one's ranked in the city.
Wow.
So I don't know if that would have happened, but I kind of like to think I had a little influence on their sportiness.
Mm-hmm.
But taking the places, like first started, you know, it was always like, all right, we're going to museum, but they could fall down on the floor in the middle of the floor and just have like a screaming fit in the middle of the museum. So just got to deal with that,
yeah.
You know? So it was just like, we did it, but it was like, you know, just be prepared for any minute. Someone could just start screaming their brains out.
Yeah.
this summer will be my biggest trip with them ever. I'm taking them to Budapest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I've been slowly building up to this. Like we went to Bear Mountain. We did a couple other little trips. Because of their running, we go to nationals and regionals. So I have to coordinate those trips. So that was kind of a good segue into coordinating a real vacation in Europe, which I haven't been to since the kids were born. So, you know, you just do what you can do.
Yeah.
You build up slowly.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
Has it been easier for you to do the things for you as they've gotten older?
Kind of. Yeah. You know, I kind of live a simple life. I found that like, I have to kind of be like, okay, there's things that I'm going to do when they're gone. And right now they're just not doable. Like I'm really good at doing work and doing kids. And then I occasionally, you know, I try to like once or twice a week go out and see friends just to like not be totally those two modes. But I think living a simple life, you know, just kind of accepting, like I decided to do this kids thing. It's going to take up a lot of time, just kind of go with it. And then, you know, they're going to be gone in 4 years. And I can do whatever I want then. Like,
yeah.
If I want to do something crazy, I'll have time to do it. So,
with the kids, how do you find the time and mental energy for experimentation in your work?
Again, I live a simple life.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time still doing work. Like, this week, I just clocked like 5 9-hour days in a row. So, you know, which before I had kids, I could do like a 10-12-hour day without even blinking. But 9 hours with kids is actually a lot. That's what I mean is I just my work actually lately has really kind of blossomed a bit. Like it's gotten like, I feel like I've had a new, like kind of getting back to work. Like as the kids got older, I feel like my work got better and better and better again, as I had a little more time. You know, they go off to school, they do track after school. So I have, you know, during the week they leave at like 7 and they're not back till 6 or 7 at night. So I have that long period of time.
Yeah. When did that start happening, that they get back so that they have all these like activities after school and stuff?
Well, actually, it's only with one of them now, because that's high school. High school track goes 5 days a week. So the other one still comes home at 3-something, well, 2 days a week, because she does another after school, but she'll be starting high school next year. So that's going to be kind of a different phase too.
Yeah. You're currently in the middle of the teenage years, as you mentioned, and a single mother. And I can't imagine how difficult that must be emotionally and practically. How do you deal with all of that at once?
Emotionally, it's actually, I'm telling you, the teenage years was not, it's a lot, my kids shouldn't hear this, but I guess it's a lot easier than I was expecting. I expect a lot more like door banging, door slamming and like fraughtness, but our apartment actually is a pretty calm place. Like, I'm a very organized person and I like not having a lot of clutter, and I try to keep it really organized and stay on top of, the logistics for them. Although occasionally I'll forget a logistic, because you can't do everything perfectly as a parent. You're destined to screw up at least once or twice a week. So because our house kind of like everything happens on a certain schedule, like we get up at 5:45, I get their lunches ready, get their breakfast ready. They go out, I either go to swim practice or I go back to sleep for a little bit. You know, we follow the same exact schedule every day. Things have kind of a calmness to them. Mm-hmm. That helps. And also, I mean, surprisingly, three women, two who just went through puberty, one who's probably going to go through menopause soon, it's actually pretty calm.
Do you think that's a function of your personalities together?
Yeah, or? Definitely. And I just am happier that way with a calm house. Yeah. But really, I think back to myself as a teenager, and I swear I was like, wow, I was so much harder than they were. I feel like my teenagers were so fraught with like anxiety and stuff, and they're much calmer. And it's also, I feel like it's definitely their generation is different. It's a little calmer than mine was, like a lot less like, you know, they get to be kids longer. They weren't, you know, suddenly presented with adults. I feel like I was presented with adulthood in some ways, like around seventh or eighth grade, which is way too young.
Yeah. Were they calm? Yeah. Were they calm when they were little kids? I mean, like there's a lot of door slamming going on in my house these days.
Oh my God. I feel like when they were like three, it was like, I felt like I had, when I brought them home, I felt like they were a little between an exotic pet and Norman Desmond, you know, from Sunset Boulevard. Like, I was like, you're just going to go off at any minute. Yep. And I don't know when that's going to happen. And that was really like, how old are your kids?
She's 3.5.
Yeah, 3. Like, I don't know if you feel that way. You're like, you could be in the middle of somewhere and it's just like it erupt into like crazy. And you just got to be ready, like ready with wipes, ready with plastic bags for vomit, ready for like any sort of like, no, they were normal. 3-year-olds. Yeah. Yeah. But the nice thing about teenagers is you can talk to them and you can reason with them and they can get up and walk in the other room and calm down. So it's much, much easier. And they're much more articulate than a 3-year-old is, which is nice.
I would hope so. Yeah.
I think a lot of the frustration with the threes is they can't express themselves. And a teenager is very verbal. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, other than the first year of your work, the first year being a mother, how do you think being a mother has impacted your work, whether it's your process or the actual content of it, or if it has at all?
Oh, it definitely has. It was funny. One of the clients I got when my kids were born was Nickelodeon was starting this new station called Noggin. And it was like 0-3, kind of educational. It wasn't as commercial as Nickelodeon. So the creative director, Matthew Dunteman, and I were kind of left to our own devices to create these little animations and all these, they're called interstitials, the animations in between the shows. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of fun because I could do it with the kids. Like, I would shoot pictures in playgrounds and stuff like that. So it was super fun. And it was kind of like I had my own little child to learn about the world of 0-3 with the 0-3-year-old. So that part was really fun. And that definitely was like perfect timing with my life. Mm-hmm. Now my kids are really into art, so it's almost like having two other artists around the house, and we kind of all influence each other. And being teenagers, they're definitely tapped way more into popular culture than I am at 51. So I would say definitely affects. And as far as logistics, you just get super efficient with your time. Like, you focus and much more focused than I had when I didn't have kids. Like, when I didn't have kids, it was like time was just never ending, abundant. Now it's just like, all right, I got to focus. I got to get this done. You know, I want to do this job really well. So, you know, I can't just, you know, I really have to be super concentrated about my time and not goof off.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any lessons that you've learned about illustration specifically as a parent, other than like time management, I guess?
Oh, it's good for dealing with clients. You're dealing with a tough client is kind of like dealing with a 3-year-old. So you learn, you know, better how to speak to someone who's just like a bad client. Like, I feel like dealing with a 3-year-old was my lesson in dealing with rough clients.
Yeah.
You speak very calmly, speak very slowly, speak about the project in the third person. Like, I am serving the project, not the client. Like, if the client's project is called orange and they want me to use purple because their wife likes purple, I have to explain to them why that doesn't serve their project, which is called orange, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's very much like, it's like kind of like when you talk to a 3-year-old, it's almost like you're talking to someone a suicide person off the ledge of something. And you learn to speak very calmly and slowly and kind of think about what you say before you say it and not get caught up in the 3-year-old's crazy and lose your, like, you're like, ah, and the client who's going off the rails a little bit or is worried about something, you know, you learn to speak to them in that same way.
Yeah. Well, your work is very, I don't like to say very varied. That doesn't sound good, but it is varied in its style. And I would love to hear a little bit about how you approach a new editorial assignment, given the different styles.
Well, I went to school for graphic design, when I was at school, the lesson in illustration was you have the style, it's your style, everyone knows you by it, don't confuse art directors by changing it too much because that'll freak them out. And whereas the lesson in graphic design was style is a tool. Style is a tool to help you communicate your idea. And you, even though you are you, you use your style to help communicate that project. Like if I'm doing something for, let's say, a parenting magazine, it'll have a very different style than for a music band. You know, those are just two different entities and they should have two different looks. So when I get a project, I have some clients who only use me for one style. I have some clients who tell me what style they would like me to use for a specific project. And I have other clients who are like, what do you think is right? So, you know, we have an upfront talk about style right off the bat. And then what I try to do is really, for me, it's like using color or composition. It's just another tool in my toolbox to help communicate the idea.
Yeah. Given that you've been a successful illustrator for some time, how do you feel about the current state of budgets for illustration and what we as illustrators can do to improve things for ourselves? I mean, if anybody needs to make more money, it's those of us with kids.
Yeah. It's a little frustrating because, like, you know, I get paid what I got paid when I started. And that's a bit frustrating. Maybe the budgets have gone up a teeny bit, but barely. Whereas, like, the cost of living, especially in New York, is nowhere where it was in 1990. Mm-hmm. So, and also, you know, editorial is definitely, I do a lot of editorial, and that's going through a thing right now. You know, there used to be a bazillion magazines, and now there aren't a bazillion magazines. I think, you know, what my career model was always like do a little design, do a little something else. And I think a lot of illustrators now have careers like that where they're not just editorial or they're not just book. You're just kind of open to whatever project comes across your path, mm-hmm. Which is in a way better because doing the same, like there was one year where all I did was editorial and I was so burnt out by the end. Like I felt like I illustrated some concepts like 5 times. So it's nice to have varied projects. I mean, I think that's the best thing you can do is just cast a wider net. Mm-hmm. But yeah, financially the situation sucks a bit. Yeah. There's no getting around that.
Do you push back very often when it comes to like editorial on budgets? I mean, I know a lot of clients have very set budgets, but
I try to. Yeah. I try to. And it's hard, you know, it's a woman thing almost. Men always are like, I want more, and they have no problem asking for more. And I feel like as a woman, we're always like a little more hesitant, like, should I ask for more? And it's just like, you should totally ask for more.
I remember specifically at Icon in Austin when they did like the survey and they mentioned how often you ask for more money. They had the survey.
What was the survey?
Where one of the questions was about how often you ask for more money, and they divided it between like men and women. and the difference was pretty stark. And I've tried to use that as inspiration or motivation to ask when I can, you know, when I feel comfortable doing it. But
yeah, I don't know what that ingrained thing is, because I never grew up in like a very traditional environment, but yet I still have the same problem and I kind of don't like that in myself.
Speaking of ICON, you are teaching a workshop at ICON in Detroit this summer called 25 Lessons Learned from 25 Years as an Illustrator. And I was wondering if you would mind sharing one or two of those lessons or teasers of those lessons.
Well, actually, I'm kind of forming it now, but it's based on a lot of lectures I've done in the past. The section on parenting, I've kind of gone over some of them. One is like, you know, how to balance kids and work? And the answer is you can't. No one can. No, I don't know anyone who can. And if you're beating yourself up because you think you're doing a bad job at both, you're probably doing a really good job at both because you're spending a lot of time on both. And just to kind of enjoy the ride and accept that everything will not get done at the end of the day. Another one is the 48-hour rule. Okay, 48-hour rule, I developed that when I was kids. I always stay 48 hours ahead of every deadline because I got sick of like calling art directors being like, I'm sorry, I can't finish your piece today. My kid has chicken pox or foot and mouth disease or whatever. So what I did was if I stay 48 hours ahead of every deadline, like pretend everything's due 2 days before it's actually due, any kid drama can be solved in 48 hours, at least to some extent. And no one needs to know my kid drama. And I don't feel like they're not going to use me again because I've got kid drama going on.
Right.
So that is one of the best pieces of advice I can give parents.
Do you when your kids were younger, did you avoid taking on projects that had shorter deadlines than that?
No, nope. Did the New York Times op-ed, which is same day deadline, everything. Those are the only ones, like, if I knew. Actually, when my first daughter, the day my first daughter was born, I was working on a 1 day deadline and my water broke. Oh, no. The only time it didn't really work out for me.
I was going to say, did you finish it?
No, I called the art director like, and I warned him. I was like, it's my due date, but no one ever gives birth on their due date, and started working on it. And then all of a sudden my water like broke and I called him. I was like, you know, I said it was my due date. Well, my water just broke. And he's like, no problem. That's the best excuse I've ever heard for not finishing an illustration.
Yeah, that's a good excuse. Do you have any words of advice for people who might be considering having children or about to have children and working freelance?
You know, just take it as it is. It was hard because it's like, if you think about it, there's no reason to ever do that. Like, there's plenty of humans in the world, you know, we're not dying from underpopulation. If they're like me, I feel like most parents are like me, you just do it against your own better judgment. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, a little bit. Sometimes I still feel that way.
I think just accept it. You know, like every day I kind of make a plan for what I'm going to get done for the day. And I would say 9 out of 10, all of it never happens. And you just kind of got to go with the flow on that one and not beat yourself up and just be like, you know what? I say this to my kids all the time. I'm like, it gets done when it gets done around here. Like, it will get done before it's due. It may be 5 minutes before it's due, but it will get done.
Yeah.
So you just kind of have to live that way and just be really organized. That's my advice. Like, as organized as you can possibly be, it will make your life easier. Yeah.
When I talk to people who have older kids, I like to get their opinions on what ages you think were the hardest and the easiest so far, anyway.
I would say from the day I brought my daughter home, every day has gotten easier since that day. Every week gets easier, every day gets easier. But it's not like with teenagers, they're on autopilot. Like, there's once they become teenagers, especially in New York City, you know, I had to write an essay for my daughter to get into preschool. It was crazy. Like, I'm like, I don't know what to write about a 1.5-year-old. She poops.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a first program. there's a lot of legit, you know, probably more in New York than anywhere else, because it's like, then you have to do that process for middle school and then for high school. Like, it's kind of a crazy process. And now I'm about to do it for college. But every New Yorker says, once you've done middle school and high school, college is a cinch, except for paying for it. There's still a lot of logistics with teenagers. Mm-hmm. They eat a lot of food. There's a lot of food shopping and preparation that goes on with teenagers. So it's not like there's no time, but I swear it just gets easier as they get older.
Yeah.
For me.
How did you handle it when you had one and then your second daughter came along and you've got a toddler and a baby and trying to...
Oh, that was just insanity. It was just insanity. That's all I can describe it. It was just crazy. Like, there was that one time where my toddler brought home chicken pox. She had the chicken pox vaccine the first year it came out, so mm-hmm. it only half worked. So she brought it home to my other daughter, who a week later was going to turn one and get the chicken pox vaccine. So I had a less than 1 year old with chicken pox. I'm bringing her to the doctor, and the doctor's looking at my toddler, and she's like, why is her face so red? And it turns out she had this thing called slap cheek, which is Fisk's disease. And I'm like, I got one that looks like tomato, another one that's covered in spots. I've got deadlines this week. This is just, it's just almost inhuman. Yeah. You've got to have a really good sense of humor and just go with it.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, do you have any projects or anything coming out that we can be on the lookout for? Or
I'm talking at Icon, and I'm doing the normal range of editorial and other projects. I started to do some more product stuff, like I'm selling prints on art.com, and I'm now getting some stuff together to do with Threadless. I think that's about it. I have a show up at the Library of a piece in a show at the Library of Congress called Drawn to Purpose about women in illustration.
Oh, nice.
So yeah.
You've been on the board for Icon before? Is that?
Yeah, right? I did workshops for Icon 8, and I was a vice president for Icon 9, which is kind of like being the mom. Like, it was all logistics being the vice president. So I'm like, I can totally do logistics.
Well, hopefully this will be out before Icon actually happens. So I would love if you could tell people, you know, what, I guess I don't know how to phrase this. It's not, I didn't plan this question in advance. So what do you think the biggest benefit of going to Icon is for illustrators, especially for, you know, parents who have to get away from the kids for a few days, which is a benefit in it of itself, but.
It was funny. The first Icon I went to was the one in Pasadena. So I'm thinking that's 6. And at that point, my kids were, I want to say like 3 and 5 or something. And I felt really out of it. Like I just felt out of the loop. I didn't hang out with illustrators. I was like missing the American illustration parties and stuff like that. Like I really just felt like I was starting to get out of the loop of everything. And one of the art directors I've been working for a long time, Sujin, asked me to talk about this thing that went down with Google. And I went there and I suddenly was like, I've got to update my website. I've got, like, I saw all these things. I can't remember what all the things were, but I was like, I hadn't really started using social media yet. And by then there was a lot of illustrators who were like using social media to get work. And I just felt like I had just kind of lost touch with everything. And it was a way for me to almost be like, you know, I'm just going to come here and see what's going on. And I felt like it was my re-entry back into the world of illustration in the community, which was really nice.
Yeah.
I didn't feel so isolated, like I was kind of spinning off into non-existence land. So yeah. I think for parents, it's just a good thing. It's a good thing to bring you back and, you know, just kind of go with an open mind. And there's all different ways you can connect with people there and what's going on in the illustration world.
Yeah. And it's nice to stay in a hotel room without your kids for a couple of nights. God. Although I'm sharing a room this year.
The hotel at Pasadena was really nice. And I just remember I ordered breakfast in bed and I was sitting in the like comfy robe in a huge bed with no like puke on it. And I was like, this is what it's like. I miss this so much.
Yeah. I'm just looking forward to those three or four nights. Our daughter hasn't been that interested in going to sleep lately. A lot of like, bedtime is like, well, true. She used to be pretty good about just like, we had a routine and she would go to bed and, you know, wasn't really that big of a deal. And now it's like a huge gauntlet. And so yeah. Like, I can't wait to just go to bed when I want to go to bed. And that's that. Be done with it.
I still travel. Like I just went to MICA to crit the grad students and I had a night in a hotel room. And even though they're teenagers, just to have a night off mm-hmm. is so refreshing and it kind of renews you and you're like, all right, I can go back and do this afterwards. I might feel that way after Detroit. Like even Detroit, I'm looking forward to it. It's like a couple days where I get to be childless for a few days, come stay with the kids. And then I feel like at the end of all my days, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for more.
Yeah. Well, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but thank you so much for being on the show, Melinda.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was really great talking to you.
Thanks again to Melinda Beck for being on the podcast. As much as I love to commiserate with other toddler parents about how hard it is, sometimes it's nice to hear from the parents of teenagers, you know, from people who have come out the other side of the toddler years and have a little bit of objectivity as it relates to parenting and working from home. If you are going to ICON next month, don't miss her workshop if you can get in. I think it's probably sold out, but in my experience, a lot of spaces can open up between now and then, so be sure to check if you're interested. And of course, say hello. Creative Playdate is syndicated on illustrationage.com, and Thomas James and Jason Ritz created the lovely theme music. You can follow me on Twitter at Miss Illustrator and on Instagram at M. Kondrich. And please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. It really helps me spread the word to other people, and it helps other people find the show more organically. Thanks so much for listening. Now go play.